Hi, you're listening to the Practical Personal Development Podcast, which is dedicated to helping you achieve a happy, healthy, and productive lifestyle. This show features everything from simple life hacks, relationship advice, goal setting, and happiness techniques, to exclusive interviews with interesting and high-profile individuals.
This week we have a very exciting interview for you with Derek Sivers. Hello, Derek Sivers. Welcome to the Practical Personal Development Podcast.
Thanks. Hi.
We're very happy to have you on the show. I heard an interview with you where you said an artist must be able to define the type of music that they play. I think it's important for every person to define who they are. But sadly, most people don't have a mission in life that they can strive for on a daily basis. You, on the other hand, seem to be driven with a purpose, and I'd love to know how you define yourself and advice for our listeners on what steps they can take in order to define themselves.
It came up conversationally with a friend last week who asked if I had a dark side. And the funny thing is, she knows me really well, and I was surprised that she was asking this. And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" And she said, "Well, sometimes I get really, you know, pissed off, and I get, you know, rage against such and such, and you know, it's." I think she was saying that her mom doesn't have that. Like, almost anybody can screw her over, and she'll say something like, "Oh, well, I'm sure they meant well." And she's like, "Come on, Mom, can't you get pissed sometimes?" And she's saying, you know, it's okay to be positively driven and yet still have a dark side. And so she's saying, "I'm just wondering, what's yours? Or do you have one? Or do you agree? And if so..." So I thought about it, and on one hand, I kind of feel that I'm ridiculously positively driven, for the most part, I see the bright side of everything. I'm just a ridiculous optimist. It's probably kind of frustrating to be around me sometimes because I'm always looking at the bright side of everything. But on the other hand, because she asked a couple times and stayed on the subject, I realized that at the core of almost everything I've done since I was a little kid is a sense of rebellion. I've always rebelled against my surroundings. So so a huge drive for me, especially starting in high school, was that as a musician, I got to know some of my fellow musicians, like in high school, their older brothers, for example, that used to be like the rock star of the high school, you know, the best guitarist mm-hmm. in school or the best drummer in school. And now they've got a job laying plumbing for the village of Hinsdale. And, you know, they got married and, hey, you got bills to pay, you know, you got to take care of the practical stuff. You know, you can't chase those rock star dreams forever. And man, that would piss me off. And I just say, I can't believe you had so much potential. You could have been a great musician, and you just blew it off in the name of mediocrity and getting some dumb day job to pay the bills. And so I was so fiercely driven to never let that happen to me that I think that actually became a core of my personality. That became this, like, never rest, never stop working, never settle, never relax, never watch TV, never hang out. I just became so fiercely driven, all as like a rebellion against that you know, that possible future. That I saw that as, this is what happens if you don't stay fiercely driven. You just fall into complacency and settle for some kind of compromise, and pretty soon you're not doing anything. So, you know, I don't know if you, in a way, that's one of the ways that I define myself, because I found since then that it is, it's at the core of a lot of what drives me, is rebelling against something, pushing against my surroundings. Other than that, the other core thing that drives me is just a sense of experimentation, like a challenge. For example, I was talking with another musician recently mm-hmm. who asked me the interesting question of, why do you make music? And her answer was that she just loves the totally intuitive free-flowing thing where it's almost like she just puts her hand on the instrument and opens her mouth and just words start flowing through and chords start appearing on the guitar. Melodies start singing, almost just like a bird in a tree, completely unpremeditated, just, you know, spontaneous flow. Mm-hmm. But mine was the exact opposite. I would give all of my years making music, I would give myself challenges. I'd say, let's see if I can take this changing chord progression that I learned from a Dizzy Gillespie song and mix it with this drum sound from Zeppelin with this kind of bass line, so-and-so, but then write lyrics from the second-person point of view, telling a story about a crime that hasn't happened yet. And I'd like lay out all these challenges for myself, and then I'd say, okay, go. And I'd use that as my restriction, and I'd take it as like this mental challenge to see if I could, achieve all that and still make a piece of music that I love. So it's like a completely opposite approach. And I think I take that approach to business too, that it's not about making money to me, and it's about seeing if I can like take some kind of challenge I lay out for myself and make it happen. So sorry, that was a really long answer, but it's funny because it just
no, that gave us a really good idea of what you're all about. I love it. And
there was a second half to your question.
What kind of advice do you have for other people to help them define themselves?
I think a lot of it is you could try to be all righteous and write some silly mission statement kind of sentence that you think you should be writing, but I think it's important to look at your past and see what has fueled you, what keeps you up all night, or what keeps you up late, the kind of thing, whether it's a great book or learning to program CSS style sheets for the web or hanging out with friends, let's be honest, look at the things that actually keep you up hours past your bedtime or get you bouncing out of bed first thing in the morning or that get you so intensely focused that hours fly by and you don't even notice. Take a look at what those things are. Take just a real objective look at that and, be true to yourself and it's okay to admit that, that a core definition of who you are is a great friend and conversationalist.
So basically you're saying look at what your addictions are and see which addiction is positive and then go with that. For example, playing a video game up all night is not exactly the most productive, healthy thing that you could be doing, and it's not going to pay the bills. But if your passion is to stay up all night playing music, writing that song, then you're onto something.
Right. It's a little bit like what's inside that? Okay, the video game's a great example. So let's say you really do spend hours and hours playing video games. What's at the core of that? Do you like maybe adrenaline is a main motivator for you? And you don't even have to take the positive. Just take the realistic. I mean, I don't think my thing about rebellion is all that positive. But I think it was really helpful when I realized that that was the core of so much of what's driven me over the years, is rebelling against my surroundings. Sometimes it's straight up negative. I was living in San Francisco for just a few months and in the end had to leave because there was nothing for me to rebel against. I was actually too similar to my surroundings so that
I got too good over there?
Yeah, I couldn't push off of anything. You know what I mean? I couldn't, usually like rebelling is a sense of kind of like propelling away from. So in growing up in Hinsdale, Illinois, I was propelling away from, the slacker, ex-musicians that compromised and got a boring, dumb job. Mm-hmm. Then I went to Berklee College of Music in Boston and everybody was hanging out, wearing black, staring at their feet. So I started wearing all white. She went out of my way and found like a white leather jacket and white jeans and started just be a freak wearing all white. And I was just like, bouncing down the street where everybody else was sulking. And moved to New York City, and everybody was so focused on going out all the time and going out to all the events and things like that, that I became practically a total hermit pushing against that and just spending all of my time intensely, internally focused on practicing and writing and inventing and creating and recording. And I went to Portland, Oregon, which is a real kind of stoner slacker culture, and I rebelled against that by getting ultra ambitious in response. And then I got to San Francisco, and yeah, everybody was too much like me. So I couldn't really rebel against it as much. I wasn't about to, go all of a sudden become some kind of arch conservative in a liberal town or something like that. It just wasn't me. So I had to leave.
It's great that you figured this out about yourself, because I can see someone with that same nature as you feeling really out of place and feeling bad about it because they don't fit in. But you just go with it, and that's your driving force. It's great.
It's almost, I make a point of not fitting in. I love not fitting in, which I guess, when I go to conferences or whatever, if I'm speaking on panels, it makes me always want to be the contrarian there, whatever. I'll just say the opposite of what everybody else is saying just for the fun of it, just to try and get
the devil's advocate.
Yeah. But yeah, so I'm sorry. So going back to what you said a few minutes ago, you don't always have to find the positive. Just find the realistic and admit it and embrace it. I mean, there's been some amazingly successful people in history that really took what could have been labeled as a downside by others and turned up the volume on it and made it who they were. You think of great writers or artists who took their mad depression or twisted perspective on the world and made it their own thing, So go with it. You don't have to spin everything positive.
Just take a look at yourself, see what's authentic and real there, and define yourself as that without trying to be anything else.
Yeah.
Great. Now, Derek, you sent me a link for something pretty special there. You are the founder and CEO of CD Baby, or at least you were.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about what this company is?
I mean, I haven't been there in a year and a half. I sold it a few months ago, so it's kind of, I don't know what it is anymore. I'm gone. I started it 10 years ago as a way, I was just selling my own CD, and some of my friends asked if I could sell their CD, and it accidentally, my little tiny hobby accidentally turned into a company, and then that company accidentally turned into the largest seller of independent music on the web. And by the time I sold it, it had something like 100 million in sales and 85 employees, which was far too big for my tastes. So I got out.
Yeah, to rebel against that too, right?
Yeah. Well, no, I think that was more of like, I think it's important to always challenge yourself. And whenever you find that you're just doing something that you can do in your sleep and you've been doing it for a while, you got to challenge yourself to get out of your comfort zone and do something new. I really try to avoid my comfort zone at all times. I hate being comfortable. So CD Baby, I've been doing it for 10 years. I mean, I probably should have gotten out 5 years ago, because really the last 5 years, I was just doing stuff I already knew how to do, and that's not where the learning growing experience is. So I wanted to get out and throw myself into something scary and challenging, and that meant starting a new company from scratch, which in itself has some challenges and limitations I've set. So I'm starting this new company called Muckwork, M-U-C-K-W-O-R-K. And my challenge for this is it's going to be an international, decentralized company that is going to provide personal assistance for musicians and eventually for other small business owners. Mm-hmm. But an actual team of assistants spread out around the world that are willing and able to help musicians do the kind of boring, uncreative, dirty work, hence the term muck work, that they need doing. But the challenge for this one for me is that I want to do it with no employees and just really have it be a loose collection of independent contractors around the world, and not have it be U.S.-centric. And just as a reminder of that, when it was time for me to set up the company, I decided to incorporate in Hong Kong instead of the U.S. So Muckwork is a Hong Kong corporation with its official home base in Hong Kong, even though me, the guy who founded it, is a U.S. citizen. I'm thinking of going to live over there for a while and just use that, if nothing else, as a symbolic reminder that it's not just a U.S. company. It's just an international company that was started by a guy that happens to be American.
And, so what's the key ingredient to your success with your former company and the new one that you're starting?
I like doing, the key to success. All right. If I had to make it something, CD Baby was an accident. I was making my full-time living as a musician. Last time I had a job was 1992. I quit my job in 1992 and haven't had one since.
Sorry, that's just too funny. Your baby was an accident. That's great.
Yeah, you're right. So I just did this little thing as a hobby. I just started a website. Then a few people said, hey, can you sell my CD? And I said, yeah, sure, I guess. And then a few of their friends called me up and started saying things like, hey, man, my friend Dave said you could sell my CD. I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. And so the only reason I created this business is because there was a huge demand for it. I mean, really, the idea is to grow reluctantly, to not try to grow, but almost to try not to grow and only grow when there's such a demand that the world is saying, we really want you to do this thing. Please do this. We will pay you money to do this thing. Then you finally say, okay, all right, I'll do it. And I think of that, I contrast that with a lot of businesses I meet that are starting something that nobody wants. Six months after they started, it's not huge and they come crying about how nobody's signing up for their business. And it's I can't help but think, well, then if nobody wants it, why did you start it? I mean, wait until there's a demand. I really like that about what Seth Godin, the marketing author, if anybody listening is unfamiliar with his work, his name is spelled Seth is S-E-T-H. Godin is G-O-D-I-N.
I'll be sure to include that in the blog article that's going to be attached to this podcast as well.
Cool. So Seth Godin, his books definitely have a theme, and the last few that he's written had a really interesting theme that he calls the purple cow, which is forget marketing an ordinary product or service. Just don't even do it. Don't spend a dime marketing something until the product or service itself is so remarkable that everybody's going and telling their friends about it, not as a favor to you, but as a favor to their friends, saying, oh my God, you have to check out this, whatever, this company, this podcast, this album, this theater production. They're telling everybody they know about it. Then you know you're onto something, because now what you're doing is truly remarkable in the literal definition of the word. And then you start spending some energy marketing it. But he's saying until you've got something that is blowing people's minds, just stay on the drawing board and keep working on it until it's blowing people's minds. And don't spend any time trying to launch or market or advertise until you hit that point. And I really like that. I think there's a good message in there about keeping the focus on the development and the creativity of improving your business instead of just trying to market something that the world isn't begging for, you know. So I guess if you said what's the key to my success, so far it's been that I was completely reluctant about CD Baby. I didn't even want to start a business, and I did it anyway because everybody was asking me to. So I said, okay, fine. And that turned out to be an incredibly useful approach, because I knew I was onto something. I had done other businesses before that had failed. You know, I'd run a booking agency for a little while. I tried starting a record label. None of that stuff went well. And then CD Baby was something that just everybody seemed to want. So it's the same thing with Muckwork, where for years I've been talking with musicians who all of them say something like, you know, I know all the stuff I should be doing, but I just don't have time. It's kind of the side effect of the DIY movement, which stands for, you know, do it yourself. Mm-hmm. all musicians are in the middle of this DIY revolution. You can do it yourself. You can be your own booking agent, be your own record label, be your own promoter, be your own engineer, be your own producer, be your own, you know, graphic designer, et cetera, be your own web designer. Great. So now all the power is in your hands, but damn, you don't have any time to get any all this stuff done. So I saw Muckwork as something just that everybody was asking if I could, you know, please help them with this and please help them with that. And I thought, well, maybe I could actually make a system with hundreds of workers spread around the world in every language that are able to help any musicians with all that kind of boring, monotonous, dirty work that they need help with.
See, what I'd like to know is, how do you stay focused with all the stuff going on? What is your key to focus?
Ooh, I am a focus junkie. I'm the opposite of information junkie. I don't use, for the most part, on my laptop all day. I don't even use Wi-Fi. I plug in the Ethernet cable for the main reason that I unplug it a lot. So I even completely disconnect from the Internet so I can just sit here and focus on the programming. I turn off my cell phone. Even my cell phone number is, for the most part, unlisted. Like, I don't use my cell phone for business. Only about 20 friends know my cell phone number. But even then, I turn it off when I'm focused. I unsubscribe from all mailing lists. I don't read, for the most part, I don't read news or blogs. It's kind of like if you read Tim Ferriss's book, The 4-Hour Workweek. I loved his chapter called the Low Information Diet.
Mm-hmm.
I think somewhere on his blog, he showed this picture of this like 500-pound obese man on a couch, you know, one of those guys that's like immobile, you know, mm-hmm. Guinness Book of World Records type. And he said if most of us took in calories the way we took in information, we'd all look like this. And I thought that made a really good point, that he put it really succinctly in the book, saying, unless you're planning to act immediately on some bit of information, don't even take it in. You know, so it's like, you know, those people who read the newspaper every morning for an hour. They get their Boston Globe or New York Times, whatever, and they pore over it for an hour over breakfast. And I can't help but thinking, like, okay, great. So you learned about all the terrible things going on in the world. What are you doing about it today? And if the answer is nothing, then it's like, well, why did you just spend that hour of your morning that could have been spent doing something else, passively reading about, you know, tragedies worldwide, if you're not going to do something about it? So I'm a focus junkie. I really think that that's key. But you asked how I keep focus. Yeah, so I guess I just filter out all distractions. I'm really, you know, always kind of looking out for distractions and making sure to eliminate them. And other than that, it really has to come from just something actually exciting you. I mean, talk about, you know, your very first question about where does your definition of who you are come from.
Right.
Noticing what really excites you. I think, for example, a lot of musicians I know are kind of going through the motions, doing stuff that they don't really want to do, but somebody's told them they should do. You know, somebody tells them they should read this big giant book about social networking by Clay Shirky. And so they start to read through it, but the whole time they're really just kind of wishing that they had their headphones on in the recording studio and they were singing.
Mm-hmm.
And for somebody like that, I'd say, well, then, you know, don't try to read this book about the culture of social networking. Get in the studio with your headphones on and start singing. Like, just do whatever the thing is that excites you the most is what you should be doing, even if somebody has told you otherwise. So for me, I found the hard way that it was programming. After starting the company, I thought that I was supposed to be doing all of this kind of business schmoozing, networking, business development, talking deals with other companies, and I just found I hated all that stuff. What I really wanted to do was be sitting in solitude on a Linux terminal, programming in SQL, PHP, Ruby. That was my favorite stuff. So I just ended up organizing the company around that need. And I made myself like the main technology guy, and I hired other people to do the biz dev stuff that you would ordinarily assume that the owner of the company should be doing. Mm-hmm. So how to stay focused? First, eliminate all the other distractions, and all of a sudden you'll just have this crazy amount of open, undistracted, free time. Almost, it might even freak you out to not be connected to the internet, for example. You know, I really love unplugging that cable because even me sometimes I get a twitchy kind of, but what if I got some emails, you know? And I find myself thinking along those lines, and mm-hmm. that's what I'm really glad that my Ethernet cable is unplugged, that I don't even have the ability to go check my email at that moment.
So that gets me curious. When I emailed you to request an interview, I made the assumption that you're a very busy guy, and you jokingly replied that you aren't busy at all. You linked me to your Wired magazine interview. It said that you sold your company for $22 million, and it said you'd love to be on the show after Hawaii. So it sounds like you're a really laid-back guy nowadays. What I would want to know is, how does your day-to-day look now compared to when you were running this big company?
Well, it's actually been the same for years. It's busy to me seems to... A lot of people use the word busy to mean I'm doing a bunch of stuff I have to do. And to me, I think I just set some... Now it just feels like everything I'm doing after selling my company is just whatever I want to do. So here's an example. I'm going to be setting up a new project that does a lot of success story interviews with independent musicians who have had a recent success. Mm-hmm. And so I announced to some people that I was going to be doing this and said that I'd be looking for subjects to interview. And this one woman who was a manager of a band asked if I could interview her band, and I said, yeah, that sounds like they might be good. And then she emailed me back like a week later saying, okay, can we do the interview in December because their new album's coming out in January and it would be really good for our schedule if such and such. And at first, my first instinct was to say, yeah, sure, I could probably make that happen. Then I thought about it. I was like, well, hold on a second. I don't want to promise anything because what if I don't feel like doing it in December? I don't have to. So I ended up telling her no. Like, I just ended up saying, well, I get your point, but I'll do it when I feel like doing it. I really don't feel like making any kind of deadline. I'm not doing this for money. There will be no profit for anybody. This is just something I feel like doing, so I guess I'll do it when I feel like doing it. And I'm trying to keep that same dogged commitment to just keeping things on my own terms. Which is, it's not just, you know, a rich guy talking. I think anybody can try to do that wherever possible to realize what kind of things are you agreeing to that you really didn't need to agree to, and except, you know, some, whether it's guilt or some social norms that you accepted at some point told you that you should be saying yes to, you know, your friend who wants the person who you barely know from high school who's getting married in Alaska and wants you to spend 4 days of your time, you know, going up there to be one of the 600 people in the crowd at the wedding. You know, maybe it's learning to say no to those things that don't actually excite you. And all of a sudden you find that if you say no to everything that doesn't actually excite you, just let go of some of those social expectations, you have a lot more free time.
So basically you just live every day on your terms. So I'd like to know, what do you do on a daily basis for personal growth? How do you improve yourself if that's something you feel like doing?
Okay. Yeah, so I do live every day on my terms. The last couple of years, I've been a little too moment-to-moment whimsical for my taste. I've just wake up each day and just kind of follow my interests. And maybe I have some kind of grand plan for something I'd like to make, such as, you know, programming muck work. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I'll just wake up and I'll just turn on the computer and I'll do a couple things and I'll let the day just kind of sweep me away. You know, somebody will tell me about scuba diving in Iceland and all of a sudden I'll get all fascinated and I'll spend half the day looking into scuba diving in Iceland or something. You know what I mean? And it's, I think that's kind of dangerous to have too much free time. Depends how you look at it. I imagine two philosophies could put a little angel on each shoulder and tell you that that's a great way to live your life is to only just follow your whims at all moments. But I found that months had gone by and I hadn't done as much as I wanted to. There were some things that I wanted to complete and achieve, such as the programming behind Muckwork, that I hadn't gotten done because I'd been following my whims. So actually just really recently, like 2 weeks ago, I set up this schedule where I decided what my top five priorities were in life right now. And in order, they were programming, exercise, creative writing, business communication, then personal social hangout time. And so when it came time to like deciding I wanted to start scheduling my day, I went for the impulse was to start doing something like, okay, well, when I first wake up, I'll check email, and then I'll exercise, and then I'll do this. And I thought, hold on a second, wouldn't it, if I'm just being purely logical about this, I should organize my day in order of priority. So whatever I said is my top priority, that's what I should do first. Mm-hmm. And then do my second priority, then do my third. Because that way, if the day takes a twist and turn and, you know, something explodes and throws my day off, at least I probably got my top two priorities done. So that's what I've started doing recently, is I wake up each morning at 7-ish and don't check email or anything. I throw myself immediately into programming. Unconnected, I make sure that I get in at least a good 4 hours of programming. And then as soon as I'm done with that, I get on my bike, and I bike about 30 miles a day, which is about 2 hours of biking.
That's pretty far.
Yeah, and it's because, you know, for 10 years I had my priorities wrong. I would say that exercise was important to me, but then I just end up checking email or getting distracted all day, and each night, you know, nighttime would roll around and I hadn't mm-hmm. done any exercise. I'd say, I'll do it tomorrow. And, you know, 10 years of that has got me in pretty bad shape. So I wanted to make sure it stays top priority and comes before checking email or before returning phone calls. So, so I do programming for 4 hours, exercise for a couple hours, then do some creative writing, and then I plug in my Ethernet and start checking email and try to even keep that limited to a couple hours, and then go out with friends for dinner or for the evening. And so I think that's a way of, if you're looking for kind of advice.
That answers my question, yeah. scheduling. I wanted to know how you define success and if you see yourself as a successful person.
I think success is doing what you set out to do or what makes you happy. No, not what you set out to do, because that could change. I think success is being happy, right? Because even say if you are a Donald Trump, that your definition of success is you need to make $1 billion, then that's what makes you happy. But I mean, really, happiness is the ultimate goal. If somebody else has the goal of they want to be a great first grade teacher, or they want to be even just a good first grade teacher and see their kids, you know, finishing the year, learning a lot more than they did when they came in. And if that's what makes you happy, then I guess you are successful if you are doing that. So I like the idea of just everybody has their own definition of success, which just leads me to think that it's just about what makes them happy. So,
do you think that happiness is the number one goal? Because the reason I ask is because the way I look at happiness is that it has the potential to be something amazing. And on the other hand, it could be something really terrible, something you should be afraid of. Because think of your childhood dream, pretty much any child, it's to eat a lot of candy. So what if you carry your childhood dream into adulthood and all you do is eat a lot of candy and cake, and, you know, this is genuinely making you happy. You're happy every day. You don't even care how you look. You're one of those obese guys that we were talking about before, 500 pounds, World Guinness Book of Records, and you die at the age of 40. Your body just didn't take it, but you died happy. Is that someone that you would describe as successful?
Maybe. It's funny. I think most people in that situation would reach a point where they don't want to be 500 pounds anymore. They would like to eat the candy, but they don't want to be 500 pounds. And so then what would make them happy is to be thin and fit again. And so in that case, they'd only be successful if they get thin and fit again. But, you know, it's kind of like that argument of, I know this is kind of a 70s reference, but Yul Brynner and Jim Fix, I think was his name, who kind of, Jim Fix was this author that wrote this incredibly popular book in the mid-70s about jogging and kind of relaunched the jogging revolution the way that, say, a Lance Armstrong got people interested in biking again. Mm-hmm. And tons of people started jogging because of him. And the funny thing is, Jim Fix dropped dead young on the same day as Yul Brynner, who was a notorious cad for, you know, always having a cigar and many drinks and a woman on each arm and whatever. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that I think it was like a stand-up comic once pointed this out, like, okay, great. So Mr. Jogging Man, you know, lean and fit, drops dead of whatever he died of. Same time as Yul Brynner, he said, I don't know about you, man. I'd rather be Yul Brynner. I'd rather be the guy that smoked and drank and philandered his way through life and died in his coffin with a smile on his face than Jim Fix, who might have had a tense, furrowed brow as he was fiercely jogging his last mile before a heart attack. So it's kind of funny, that value system of like, well, you know, if you ate sweets your whole life, and there are some people that are truly fat and happy, and sincerely, not just saying that. So
I happen to think that failure and the way that we handle it is a key ingredient to our success. What are some of the ways, the biggest ways that you failed, and how did you handle it, and what did you learn from it?
Failure. All right, sorry to sound like a page out of a self-help book, but...
It's okay, I forgive you.
I really don't believe in it. I just think that there is no such thing. If you start to look at life as, let's see what happens if, ... then there is no such thing as failure. You know, it's kind of like, let's see what happens if I start a company with no employees. And, mm-hmm. Oh my God, it goes terribly. Okay, well, what went wrong? I'm going to fix that. Let's see what happens if I change my mind and decide it's going to have employees now. Okay, let's see what happens if I decide to start a circus. Let's see what happens if I try to get a job at Google. That way, you know, anything that happens, it's kind of like I forget how this thing goes. There's something about, like, let's not judge anybody's accomplishments until they die, because up until the day they die, everything could reverse fortunes. You know, you could look at the most successful person on earth could become horribly destitute and miserable, and the most destitute and miserable person could turn out to be incredibly successful. So don't judge anybody until they die. And so it's kind of the same thing with failure, that it's just a matter of timeline. You know, if there's something that you want to do, and you've set out to do it, and it's not working, well, just, you know, correct your course and keep trying, and or just do new experiments. You know, let's see what happens if. So I really don't. I don't believe in it. There might be one other thing. I was speaking at a music conference years ago, and it was really funny that there were a bunch of musicians in the crowd asking me very musician-specific questions. You know, how do I trademark my band name? What booking agent do you recommend? And then from the back of the room, there was this man with a very kind of intense, focused look on his face, and he raised his hand, and he asked a question, and he said, what are the biggest setbacks or roadblocks, the hardest times you've had in the building and running of CD Baby? And I seriously thought about it for a minute, and I said, none. There have been no roadblocks, no obstacles, no tough times. It's just been easy. And he came up to me after the talk that day, and he said, it's your attitude that makes you think that. He said, I'll bet you actually have had things that other people would call roadblocks or hurdles or tough times, but you either just have one of those brains selectively forgets, which, you know, we all do, but I guess maybe some of us have it more, or you just seriously didn't even look at it as a roadblock. And when he really said that, I thought about it later, and I was like, okay, yeah, there are probably some things that happened in my past that would have gotten people down, and I think I do kind of selectively forget them. I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess I was pretty upset about that little thing 7 years ago. But in hindsight, that was nothing. And, you know, there was this big challenge where, you know, the VP of my company stole a bunch of money from the company and, you know, had this big horrible thing. And yeah, you're right. I'd even forgotten about that because whatever, you know, you make up for it and it's fine. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. There's my ridiculously positive attitude toward failure.
I love it. So you're obviously a big music guy. I understand that you've been a pro musician since the age of 18. Right.
Yeah.
So,
and it's just now
about,
it's become.
What about music inspires you? That's what I want to know.
It's the act of creation. I've never been a huge music fan. A lot of people start out as music fans. They love music so much they wait in line overnight for tickets. They, you know, drive hours to go see their favorite band play or whatever. I've never been like that. To me, my favorite thing is. I always like the creative act of making music. Mm-hmm. I like that it was kind of half left brain, half right brain. It was an interesting combination of creativity within restrictions. You know, it's kind of like haiku, where you're not just free form writing whatever blathering words come to your mind. With haiku, you're forced to fit it into this like 5-7-5 syllable. Scheme. And music's kind of like that. It's a nice balance of being creative, but doing it within certain restrictions of a 4-4 time signature and certain beats and rhythms and lyrics that rhyme every second or fourth or eighth line and fit the melody that you want it to fit. And I don't know, I kind of like those restrictions. So, and I like what it brings out in you, that it's an incredibly enlightening pursuit to, especially to do the incredibly vulnerable thing of putting yourself out there as an independent musician trying to make a living or even just sell some music doing it. Like, it's an incredibly vulnerable thing to do, to put yourself out there, and it involves a lot of self-reflection to, you know, to even try to write your bio. It's a really mm-hmm. tough thing. You know, I had some friends who would do, like, say, online dating or something like that, and all of a sudden you have to, like, write a profile about yourself, and see a lot of people just freeze. They're like, I don't know what to say about me. And it's the same thing with, like, musicians putting themselves out there, having to promote themselves and learn what I call, like, the Tao of promotion, which is sometimes the best promotion you can do is the least promotion. The people who try to promote too hard end up working against themselves and becoming that guy that you don't want to invite to your house next time you're having people over. I think it's a fascinating learning, growing experience, both making music and putting it out there for the world.
All right. So one of my Twitter followers, actually, I feel bad asking this question after you gave such a great response. Do you have a lot of groupies, Derek?
No, just one.
Just one. Okay. All right. So I wanted to know if there are any books that have really inspired your philosophy on life.
Yeah.
What's the top one?
Okay. First, going to point to another URL here because I read a lot. And for every book I read, I write down notes afterwards. And then I share those notes online, like my kind of cliff notes, my favorite thing. So mm-hmm. if you go to my website, sivers.org, sivers.org/book, book, mm-hmm. singular, just sivers.org/book. There's a list of the books that I've read recently and a link to the ones that I think are the most important ones to start with. So if I'm recommending books, I just tell people, you know, go to this list and there's a link and a little description of each one, like why I would recommend this book. So it's different for everybody. You know, some of the books that made a huge difference in my life were actually written just for other small business owners. Mm-hmm. So unless you're a small business owner, you won't get a lot out of this book. But if you are, it'll change your life. So, like that would, for me, there's this book called E-Myth, E-M-Y-T-H. E-Myth Revisited, I think is the full title, that totally changed my life and the way that I approach business, but wouldn't mean anything to somebody who's not a small business owner themselves. So let's see. The philosophy of life. For me, it was probably Tony Robbins. But the important thing is that I started devouring his books and audio stuff when I was like 18, 19 years old. So I read and reread and listened to and re-listened to his stuff so much that it became completely internalized by the time I was like 23, mm-hmm. to the point of where I picked up a book again when I was like 24 and I tried to read through it and I practically knew what every word, it's almost like, you know, like the lyrics to it, listening to a song where you know all the words. Mm-hmm. I was
You're
reading
singing
this book.
Along, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I knew what every line was going to say, what every sentence was going to say next. I had really, you know, I had retained everything I read because I was so into it. So that really shaped my philosophy a lot.
Yeah, he's definitely a good choice. He's one of my favorite self-improvement gurus also. Well, so
the core was, what I found that interesting is that the core message that I love the most was repeated in many other people's books. One of my favorite bits was the approach to life where everything is neutral and your thoughts, everything is just about how you choose to react to something, that we can choose our reaction. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of alienating for me when I have friends who declare every event as incredibly good news or incredibly bad news. Everything's a tragedy or a huge celebration. And I kind of really have a flatline approach to most things, which is just like, well, we'll see. You know, it's all what you make it to be. You know, you talk about failure. It's like, okay, so you just got fired today. Congratulations. You know, anything, you can just choose how you want to react to it. And you could choose the reaction that suits you best or it's the best for you. It's reactions aren't, I don't believe that thing where people say I can't help the way I feel, because mm-hmm. you can. There's that interesting question of, well, what comes first, thoughts or feelings? Because I used to think that feelings come first and then you think, but then it's actually thoughts that created your value system that create your feelings. Mm-hmm. So you can have thoughts first but change the way you feel.
I think it was the book As a Man Thinketh that said, your emotions are what you get for thinking the way you do. Is that right?
Ah, good one. I hadn't heard that. I like that.
I think that's a direct quote. Might be wrong.
Yeah, I love that.
So before we go, can you give our listeners one more tip for success?
I've been such a motor mouth for 45 minutes. It's funny. yeah. The other core philosophy that drives me is whatever scares you, go do it. That's the twin brother to whatever excites you, go do it. So let's talk about that one first. So whatever you find is naturally exciting you the most. Earlier I gave the example of scuba diving in Iceland. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, I just found myself reading about Iceland, found myself fascinated about Iceland, and then just decided I want to go. So I used some frequent flyer miles, and I went to Iceland for a few weeks. And while I was there, I saw this huge icy lake that was like 2 degrees Celsius, you know, whatever that would be, 34, 36 degrees. And it was such clear water. I was like, I want to go in. I don't know how to scuba dive, but I want to do that. So it was just following whatever my passion was at the moment, which at that point was I wanted to get in that freezing lake. So I quickly took a bunch of scuba diving lessons, and I dove 60 feet deep into the continental fissure between the tectonic plates where it's like a 60 feet deep crack in this icy lake. And I had my left hand on America and my right hand on Eurasia, because that's like where the big tectonic plates that make up the Earth meet at this Arctic lake in Iceland in this crack. And I went, my first scuba dive ever was deep into that crack. And I was like, yes. And it just felt so good. Like I just whimsically followed whatever was exciting me at the time.
It's going to be hard to top that one.
Yeah. So, but then, you know, rewind 10 years. I told you when CD Baby started, I didn't mean to start a company. I was making my living producing people's records, playing gigs. Well, I was just making my living as a musician. And then I started this website and found that I was like actually getting really into it. I was up all night in a good way, like learning HTML and then learning about databases, then learning PHP and then learning SQL. And I was fascinated. You know, the girlfriend would be calling, come on, come to bed. Like, no, I'll be there soon. Go to sleep. Don't wait up. And, you know, I'd stay up every night until 3 a.m, just furiously fascinated with this stuff, typing as fast as I could. And so pretty soon I had to admit to myself that that's what was exciting me more than going off and doing another gig at some bar. And so I just had to shift, and this is the important point, that realizing that, I shifted my life accordingly. So I stopped doing the gigs at bars that I wasn't into and decided to start doing this website called CD Baby. And I think that by following what excites you the most, doors just seem to naturally open for you, especially if it's something that benefits others, not just yourself. If you're really doing something for other people and it's exciting you, it just feels like, you know, the world will open its doors for you. But then, yeah, then the twin brother to this is that whatever scares you, go do it. You realize that the enemy is boredom. It's what you want to stop doing is whatever drains you. So being scared is actually kind of a form of being excited. It's mixed in with some other stuff, but whatever scares you is probably what you should be doing, because you'll go do it and then it won't scare you anymore. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon, you know, the world becomes a less scary place and you start taking on bigger challenges. Or, yeah, if something scares you, it means that you're probably in over your head. And I think that's a really healthy place to be. That's where all the learning and growing happens from. So, I don't know. It's just kind of a core philosophy that I try to live by. Like, whenever I find myself scared by the idea of doing something, something's really pulling me out of my comfort zone and seems impossible, and just philosophically, I try to make sure that that's what I do then. Like, I just stay drawn to that uncomfortable zone and try to stay there. And I think my life's been more exciting because of it. So
it sounds like the theme of your life is when you're doing something you love, work isn't work, it's play.
Yeah.
I love that.
I thought you were going to say, when you're doing something you love, stop it.
No, that would be rebelling.
there would be a variation on that, though. Like, yeah, if you're doing something that you're too good at, if you're doing something that you can do too easily, stop it. Do something new.
All right. Thank you, Derek Sivers, for stopping by the Practical Personal Development Podcast. You can read more about Derek on his personal website, Sivers.org. That's Siverz.org. And see you next week for another awesome show.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the interview as much as I did. And see you next week for another episode of the Practical Personal Development Podcast.